In Puerto Rico, they call themselves Boricua. But Boricua is more than a name for a person from Puerto Rico. It's a way of life that means embracing the beauty that surrounds you, seeking adventure no matter where it may lead, and sharing that vibrant spirit with everyone you meet. And you can experience all that warm, welcoming, passionate culture set in a tropical island paradise without the need for a passport for U.S. citizens or permanent residents. Learn more about how you can live Boricua at discoverpuertorico.com. In Puerto Rico, they call themselves Boricua. But Boricua is more than just a word to identify a person from Puerto Rico. It's a way of life that means embracing the beauty that surrounds you, seeking adventure, and sharing that vibrant spirit with everyone you meet. In Puerto Rico, you can experience a tropical paradise with world-class beaches. You can immerse yourself in the rich 500-year history of Old San Juan, where there are stunning forts, classic town plazas, and iconic monuments. You can indulge in a foodie paradise with renowned restaurants, seaside kiosks, and an innovative cocktail scene. And you can take in an abundance of natural wonders like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. National Forest System, all without the need for a passport for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more about the warm culture of Puerto Rico and how you can live Boricua at discoverpuertorico.com. You're listening to Unpacked by Afar.
There's not a lot taught about Native people, you know, in our educational system across the country. And so I think that, COVID really taught us to kind of slow down and take a look at what is important to us, getting away from the cities, going out in your own backyard and discovering Indian country, seeing Native people on the news. And so I think it really sparked an interest in a lot of people to, as I said, slow down and come out and visit our homelands and our people and just see, you know, the sheer beauty of our landscapes and of our culture.
That is Sherry Rupert.
I am Paiute and Washoe from Nevada, and I am the CEO for the American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association.
And I'm Aislinn Green. This week on Unpacked, we are entering the world of Native tourism. We'll meet people like Sherry who are big believers in the way that travel can benefit Native communities, and we'll answer some of the most common questions that come up from non-Native travelers who want to visit but are a little unsure about how to go about it. Questions like, can I go to a powwow? What language should I use? Can I take a photo? So, lots of good things to come. Let's get to it. Travel can be a huge economic driver for Native communities who have historically been left out of the tourism conversation.
So, in this country, tourism is funded by room tax funds. And many of our 574 Native nations in this country don't have hotels, and so therefore are not, you know, collecting room tax funds that could be contributed to the tourism industry. So when you're not paying to play, you're often left out of the marketing and promotion of your Indigenous destinations.
For more than two decades, Sherry has worked to change that. She's been with the American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association for a good chunk of that time. It's also known as IANTA for short.
Our organization was established in about 1998 by tribes, for tribes, to address the inequities in the tourism industry. So like-minded people coming together and seeing what an opportunity tourism, especially cultural tourism, was for our Native nations and communities across the country.
There's so much that non-Native travelers can learn, myself included. Even better than that, tourism can help with cultural preservation.
So we've seen, you know, economically the benefit to our tribal communities. But I think most importantly is the perpetuation of our culture through tourism. And so as we're teaching others about who we are as Native people, we're also teaching our youth, you know, evolving our youth, teaching the language, you know, carrying the traditions on.
This is important because, unfortunately, although maybe not surprisingly, there's still a lot of ignorance around Native history and contemporary life, as Sherry has learned firsthand.
some years ago when the National Museum of the American Indian opened in Washington, D.C. I had gone there because, you know, what an amazing feeling as an indigenous person of this nation to go and see this beautiful building talking about our people and our history. And so as I was standing there, there was a woman there with her daughter. And as they were looking at exhibits, she said, "Mommy, are there any Indians left?" And her mom said, "No, honey, they're all gone."
Wow.
And that was like a gut punch as a Native person standing there thinking, wow, people in this country think we're gone. Something needs to be done about that.
And Sherry has done a lot over the years, like travel around the country experiencing what Native communities have to offer. So, for example, she stayed at Shoshtanay in Arizona.
You can immerse yourself in the Navajo experience there and stay in a traditional earth and log hogan with authentic dinners, Navajo storytelling, and sunrise photo tours.
Shoshtanay is also a working sheep ranch.
And I never thought I would be interested in sheepdogs, but just, you know, how she told the story and how those dogs take care of the sheep and they have their routine and they teach the other dogs, you know, the ropes essentially on how to care for the sheep. And so it was very, very interesting to hear.
And she stayed in a traditional style of housing in South Dakota.
The Lakota Youth Development has cultural experiences in teepee stays. So you can actually stay in a teepee, and it's a Lakota youth-led initiative on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota.
So I am personally sold on meeting sheepdogs and sleeping in a teepee. So I asked Sherry, where do you begin when you're looking for these types of experiences?
I think a good way to start out is by doing some research, right? Finding those communities that are welcoming visitors. And I think NativeAmerica.travel is a good way to do that.
NativeAmerica.travel is the website that IANTA created just for us, for travelers. There's a Google translation feature, a really cool map that allows you to plot an itinerary, and they even have an app so you can use it on the go. Plus, IANTA has created one more essential resource.
We put together 15 cultural protocols to know before you visit Native homelands in the U.S.
The protocols are so helpful and touch on everything from vocabulary to etiquette.
So people are always asking us, okay, which term is preferred, you know, when you're talking about Native people? Is it American Indian? Is it Native American? Or is it Indigenous? What is Indian country? Where is Indian country? What's there to do in Indian country besides gaming, besides gambling? What are the guidelines for photography?
I'll link to the full list in the show notes. And Sherry says that if you're ever unsure about anything, don't be afraid to ask for help.
I think a lot of people maybe don't visit or think they can't visit because they don't know. And what I always say is, you know, it's an educational opportunity, and it's okay to say you don't know and you don't want to misstep and ask questions. And I think that any of these destinations that are in tourism understand that and are more than willing to answer questions.
Okay, so now let's meet some of these places and the people who live there and love them.
My name is Agichita Gia Hokshila, and that in Lakota is the Flying Soldier Boy. I was named by a veteran, and my English name is Garen Coons.
Garen was raised in Winnebago, Nebraska, and he's the communications officer for the Winnebago tribe.
We're not original to Nebraska. We came from the Wisconsin area, and we were forcibly removed by the federal government over 7 times. And through the administration of the Jackson administration and the presidency, they did a kind of like open allotment where a lot of the times the Native relatives, they would sell their land to local farmers. Now we have a mission to try to buy back some of the land.
Garen told me that there are about 1,700 tribal members on the reservation and another 3,500 spread out across the country. Now, Winnebago is just 30 minutes south of Sioux City, Iowa. And in the city, there's a small museum called the Angel Decorative Museum. On weekends, you can arrange a tour with the curator, Ben Crawford, and also see the 12 Clan Sculpture Garden, which is kind of like Winnebago's town square. The 12 sculptures tell the tribe's story.
The Winnebago tribe, before they adopted what they call the IRA constitution, each clan had a specific duty. For example, I know my father, he's of the Bear Clan. And the Bear Clan, their duty for the tribe was to serve as the security and the protectors. The Wolf Clan, they were known as like the medicine men. And then the Buffalo Clan, they were our communicators. They were the ones that were talking on behalf of the tribe. So we still kind of have some of those duties and stuff, but we're still trying to live in the modern society.
And then there's the Many Moccasins dance troupe. Its members travel around Nebraska to perform and to help dispel stereotypes.
The Many Moccasins dance troupe formed for that reason, to educate the Nebraskans and then anybody that we come in contact with. Is like, hey, you have to realize that we're all diverse and we all have our unique culture, and this is part of us. And this is the reason we dance that way, you know what I mean?
There are 574 Native nations in the United States, and each has its own language, set of songs, its own customs and traditions. But many think of Native people as one large group.
There was a little kid we went to a performance for, and he raises his hand, and he says, do the rain dance. I know you guys can do the rain dance. You guys are Indians, right? And we're like, wow. Us up here, we don't do the rain dance because you might have a great flood or whatever, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
And there's tribes down in Southwest where rain isn't really available or prevalent, you know, it's kind of in the desert setting. They have something similar to that. But we end up kind of saying, hey, water is very sacred to us. We don't necessarily do the rain dance. It's a good question. But at the same time, you have to realize there's many, many different tribes.
Travelers can also join the Winnebago Homecoming Celebration. It takes place every summer. This year, it will be from July 28th through July 30th. And the gathering celebrates the homecoming of Chief Little Priest, the last war chief of the Winnebago tribe 158 years ago. At that time, the government was planning to remove the Winnebago tribe from their land, but they offered Chief Little Priest an opportunity.
The Winnebago tribe served as a buffer between the Omaha tribe and an enemy tribe up north. And so the federal government and the army said, well, why don't you help us scout? And if you do, you can stay here in Winnebago. Well, unfortunately, you know, Chief Little Priest did that. He stepped up to the plate, but he got wounded in battle. They brought him home, and unfortunately, he didn't make it, but they had a celebration in his honor, and it was called the Homecoming of Chief Little Priest. So every year, we still celebrate that.
If you enjoyed our recent episode on Native tourism, then you should check out Toasted Sister, an award-winning show that documents the Native American food movement. Hosted by Andy Murphy, Toasted Sister talks with dozens of Native chefs, farmers, and individuals in the food industry who are working towards Indigenous food sovereignty. Each episode includes topics of sovereignty, racism, sexism, politics, and health, and a lot of personal stories about connecting with food, flavor, and culture. So go ahead. Listen to Toasted Sister on your favorite podcast app. Those are the sounds of the annual Oneida Nation Powwow. It's a dance competition and a celebration that takes place every summer on the Oneida Nation in northeastern Wisconsin. The Oneida Nation is one of 11 tribes in Wisconsin.
We are originally from the state of New York, and we came to Wisconsin in the early 1800s. And in fact, on our tribal logo, it states 1822, that we came from New York to Wisconsin. We had about 6 million acres in upstate New York, about an hour out of Manhattan. Then we came to Wisconsin, and we came in waves. There were 654 Oneidas that came from New York to Wisconsin, and we were given the reservation of 65,400 acres is our original boundaries.
That's Kirby Metoxin, a council member for the Oneida Nation. He was a tour guide for 25 years, and now he serves on several boards, including the Native American Tourism of Wisconsin. The Oneida Nation has been really progressive on the travel front.
I think we were the first tribe in Wisconsin to have our own tourism department.
Today, you can take a tour of the Oneida Museum, peek into one of five original log homes, or even tour a replica of a longhouse. And if you want to get involved in some of the bigger events, there's an Apple Fest in September.
We have our own apple orchard, And I believe there's about 32 kinds of apples you can pick.
Or you can join in October for the corn harvest.
They have different sessions, the history of the white corn and how to make a corn husk doll, and then how to braid the corn. And then you go out to the field and you hand pick.
But one of the most popular things to do is join a powwow.
Every tribe in Wisconsin hosts a powwow, and that's open to the public. Some are more traditional powwows. Some are competition. They're dancing for money.
If you've never been before, you'll be guided through the experience.
As far as what's going on within the powwow circle, your MC is conducting everything. He's telling everybody, we are now having the traditional men category. Up next is the men grass dancers, so get ready. So he's telling everybody what's going on. If there's an honor song, maybe somebody has accomplished some kind of deed. They may have a presentation of an eagle feather or a Pendleton. So he would talk, would everybody please stand? We are going to honor this family.
There's one big thing to watch out for.
When you're at a powwow, if you're going to take a picture of someone or want a picture, it's just polite to ask.
This is where that advanced research comes in. Some tribes require you to purchase a permit before taking photos, so do some Googling before you go. But no matter what, always request permission in the moment. Or, says Monique Frawa, just put the camera down and simply enjoy.
I think sometimes as a traveler or a tourist, we get caught up in the, we're experiencing something and we want to capture that. And I think sometimes we have to pause and we just have to live in the moment and really own that memory in the heart and not, you know, think about it as something that we're going to take back home and share, but just that it happened to us.
Monique is the COO of the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she wears the best jewelry.
2003, I made myself a New Year's resolution only to wear Native American art as my gift to celebrating and honoring those traditions.
Can you tell me about the art that you're wearing now?
Yes.
I'm rolling your earrings.
So I am wearing a mosaic earring by Percy Riano of the Santo Domingo Pueblo. And they are shell backing, which is a wonderful piece. And then I'm also wearing a turquoise ring that's inlaid in sterling silver. And then a bracelet by Aaron Brookshoulder that's also stamped on the inside. And so just the connections to art and that just really, I think, is something special here in New Mexico in the Southwest.
Pueblo people have been in New Mexico for more than 700 years.
So the 19 Pueblos of New Mexico are Native American groups, tribes, nations, bands, but more in particular, they're sovereign nations amongst themselves. And so there's 19 in New Mexico that spanned up and down the Rio Grande Valley as far north as the mountains of Taos and south to the Pueblo of Isleta. And then out to the west, we have our Pueblo of Zuni, which is the westernmost Pueblo.
The cultural center is meant to be the gateway to the Pueblos. You can buy really cool native-made art and jewelry in the gift shop and eat blue corn enchiladas and bison cabbage stew in the Indian Pueblo kitchen. Plus, it's the best place to prep for a trip to one of the Pueblos.
We want to create experiences for our guests that are steeped in culture. We welcome them here first, so that way we can make sure that we're educating them on the proper Pueblo etiquette, the do's and don'ts of visiting a Pueblo community. And really understanding that tourism within Pueblo communities is driven by the community itself.
For Monique and the center, that means keeping one principle at the forefront.
Keep in mind that our Pueblo communities are really living communities. It's not an exhibition. We hear from guests that they really want to go and experience Pueblo culture, but we always make sure to tell them that that's through a lens of a living community, a breathing culture, and just to be mindful and respectful of that.
Some Pueblos are completely closed to the public, and sometimes Pueblos that are usually open may be temporarily closed.
When we're closed, we hope that those guests don't feel disappointed or feel like they missed an opportunity, because sometimes when our communities are closed, it's because of a cultural reason or something else that's happening that's more important than hosting guests.
At the center, you can also ask questions about language, something that many people sometimes struggle with. Monique says that makes sense because vocabulary changes over time.
So there are some people that say Indian Pueblo Cultural Center, what is an Indian and what is Pueblo, and sort of breaking that apart. And the best way that I can describe it and share is I can tell really the era in which something happened. And so 1970s, American Indian movement, Indian, it was a term at that time that was used. I don't know that it's our place today to say whether that was good or bad. We just know that that happened. Mm-hmm. And then over time, it changed. It changed to American Indian. It changed to Native American. It changed to Indigenous. It changed to Native. I would say a Native American is probably the most widely accepted. But if you were to ask a younger generation, they might say it's Native. So I think it's just the evolution of language.
Monique also recommends simply listening.
I think when we enter into new spaces, and especially cultural spaces, we should just take the time to pause and listen to those around you. And, you know, places like the Indian Public Cultural Center, we're here as a safe space where people can ask those sort of questions and get the right guidance.
It goes back to what she said about the Pueblos being living, breathing, evolving entities. And this goes for really any Native community we might visit.
When you're visiting a culture that has existed over a millennium since time immemorial, it's one of those things that those special moments aren't driven by selling of culture. They exist whether or not the visitor is there or not. Like our Pueblo Feast Days is a really good example of that. We celebrate our Pueblo Feast Days year in and year out, not because we're doing a showcase or a commodity. It's a prayer in our Pueblo communities. And so even if the visitor wasn't there, even if it wasn't filled with guests, that celebration would still continue.
These experiences are just the beginning. Of course, when it comes to tribal tourism, remember that there are more than 500 Native nations in this country alone. Looking for these experiences is fun, yes, and a great way to support communities that are really investing in tourism. Plus, they widen our perspective on the world. Here's Sherry again from IANTA.
I guess we get siloed in who we are or who we think we are. And I think with any travel that you do, it kind of opens up your horizons. It kind of opens up your perspective of what is really out there. And I think it's the same for our Native nations and communities that, you know, when people come and visit us, they begin to understand our connection as Native people to the land and to our environment. And I think we all can learn from each other in that way.
I mean, the day that I spent at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque last year was one of the highlights of my trip. I ate fantastic food, met incredible people, and learned about some of these really impressive movements happening across the state. So we'll include links to all of the experiences that we mentioned in the episode. And if you can, while you're out traveling, see if the tribe or nation you're visiting has a Native-owned hotel, because any taxes and fees that you pay go directly into the community and can help support future tourism efforts. Ready for more unpacking? Visit afar.com and be sure to follow us on Instagram and X. We are at Afar Media. If you enjoyed today's exploration, I hope you'll come back for more great stories. Subscribing always makes that easy. And be sure to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platforms. It helps other travelers find it. And if you ever want to ask a question or suggest a topic for coverage, you can reach out to us at afar.com/feedback or email us at unpacked@afar.com. This has been Unpacked, a production of Afar Media. The podcast is produced by Aislinn Green and Nikki Galteland. Music composition by Chris Collin. And remember, the world is complicated. We're here to help you unpack it.